Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. Well, hello, everyone. I am so excited for today's show. We're going to talk about a topic I have been wanting to on here for quite some time. As a psychologist, I'm fascinated with trying to understand more about each individual person with whom I work and really understand more about the origins of their particular struggles so that I can help treat them. I know there's never one reason for why people struggle with something, especially when it comes to having an eating disorder. Look, it's very complex and there are really a lot of contributing factors. However, I have with us today a guest who is going to shed some light on attachment style. She's here to talk about what they are, how to know what yours is, and why it could be the key to understanding some of why you've been struggling in areas of your life. Brittany has always been passionate about the psychology behind relationships. After completing her bachelor's degree in psychology at Whitworth University, she went on to earn her doctoral degree in counseling psychology at the University of North Texas. Brittany founded Lone Wolf No Longer in 2020 and has been helping create healthy, authentic relationships ever since. Brittany, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk about this topic.
Well, me too. As I was talking to you before the show, I have been wanting to talk about attachment for so long on the show, and you are here. So would you mind if we kind of just go over a background about attachment? Because I don't even know if people really know where the concept came from or, you know, much about it. So I think that's actually an important part of this.
Yeah, I think that, again, this is up and coming and popular. So we're seeing this a lot in pop culture, and maybe not knowing really where it came from or what it's about. But it first came about in the early 1900s. Actually, John Bowlby was the first. He's like the grandfather of it all. And he was actually working with juvenile delinquents. And he was starting to see these like patterns and behaviors, the ways that they were acting, and recognize that, like, okay, they aren't like terrible, horrible, bad people, but these relationships that they had in their families were causing some of these ways and patterns and behaviors that were resulting in some of their delinquent behavior. And he, again, after that, like, took off and did a bunch of different research on that, was able to come up with these different categories that he was seeing that, like, people would fall into of how they related to people. And then we have Mary Ainsworth, who is also a big founder of this. And it's really great. If you want to go on YouTube, you can actually see some of her experiments being done still. So you can go and check that out. It's called The Strange Experiment. And she would bring in mothers and their infants. And she would have the moms leave the room or re-enter the room. And how that child would react. Would the child cry when the mom left? Would the child, like, go and seek comfort when the mom returned? She was starting to see, okay, I'm starting to see these patterns that John Bowlby was seeing in later adolescence, even in infants. So this beginning research, they're like, birth to age 3, your relationship with your caregivers, you are stuck in this pattern of behaving. You're learning how the world works. And at that point, you've learned that people are either trustworthy and dependable or they're not. Thankfully, we have a lot of more modern research that shows that this is a lot more flexible than we first thought. And yes, in our childhood and early adolescence, there's a lot happening there and a lot of things forming, but still, even in our, you know, late adulthood, there are a lot of ways that our brain still can change and our relationship with people can still change. So even if you're listening to this and you're hearing, oh my gosh, I had a terrible relationship with my parents, or maybe I still do. Am I going to have these more difficult ways of interacting with people and more insecure relationships my whole life? And that's absolutely not true. We definitely can work on that security.
Well, that's good, because I know sometimes people hear things and go, oh my gosh, like I'm doomed. I'm going to, you know, be destined to have this kind of attachment style that maybe isn't healthy. And, you know, when you first started talking about delinquents, people were probably thinking, oh my gosh, like, what does that mean for me? But, you know, to your point too, you said, you know, attachment's kind of this buzzword now. And I don't know if people actually know there's different types of attachment that they found. And so I think it's important to actually talk about there's three types. So would you mind talking to us a little bit more about the three types and how, what those actually look like?
Yeah. So I always like to talk about this in terms of their view of themselves and the view of other people, right? So attachment theory is this idea of you've learned ways of navigating the world to keep yourself safe. So you've learned things about myself. Am I capable? Am I capable of taking care of myself? Am I not? Are others trustworthy? Are they going to be there for me when I need to? Are they not going to be? And that's what forms these different attachment styles. So secure is the attachment style that we want. All the other attachment styles actually get lumped together in this grouping called insecure attachments, but we'll go into those individual names. The secure attachment means like I trust myself and I trust others. So I know that I can be independent and I know I can depend on others and not lose myself. So this is people who interact easily in relationships. They're not worried about their partner leaving them or abandoning them. They're not trying to seek independence or worried that they're not going to get their alone time or their me time or going to lose themselves in relationships. They know if they're alone, they can take care of themselves. And also that they want to lean into others and know that relationships are really important and are safe places. So you can already start thinking, right? Like, if you haven't learned that places are safe or that you are capable of taking care of yourself, there you might have learned some lessons, might be thinking about some of the things that happened in your childhood that maybe didn't fit that. So then we have the insecure attachments. And these are, depending like who you're listening to or where you're doing this reading, it might be called something different, but these are the most common terms that we use. So we have the anxious attachment. And they have a belief about themselves that I'm not good and others are good. So I'm not capable of taking care of myself or getting my needs met by myself. And so I need to rely on others. But because I think that I'm not good, I'm constantly worried that people are going to reject me and leave me. So these are the people that you see that maybe are constantly in relationships or constantly having more drama in their relationships because their partner doesn't text them back and it sends them into a frenzy because, yeah, and they don't think they can take care of themselves. So they're like, oh no, is this person going to leave me? They're not going to be there for me. You know, later we'll get into how this connects to like body image, right? We're constantly worried about being rejected. We're constantly worried what others think about us, how they see us. Because again, we're wanting those connections with others because we see them as so amazing and great and capable, and not having that same self-confidence for ourselves. And then we have the opposite end with this is called the avoidant attachment. And this is based on, I think I'm good. I got everything under control. Others are a mess and they constantly need me and aren't really dependable to rely on. So these folks are constantly... These are the high achieving, doing really well in group projects. They probably just took over the whole group project and, you know, figured it out themselves. They constantly kind of feel like I have to do everything on my own. There's no other choice. No one else is going to be there for me to help me. And I can't rely on them. Also, because they think I'm the only one that can take care of myself, that resource is limited and scarce. So if anyone else in their life needs something from them, it feels overwhelming. Like, oh my goodness, they're so needy. I can't handle this. I can't deal with this right now. Like, you need to take care of yourself. So you experience that, or you've ever been in a relationship with someone where you ask for something small and they get super defensive or push you away. That's again, that fear of like that scarcity resource of like, I only have so much energy to take care of myself. I can't be responsible for taking care of you. And then we have a fourth type, which is both anxious and avoidant. And research shows that this type is actually a very, very small percentage. But all of my clients will say, well, like sometimes I identify with avoidant, sometimes I identify as anxious. So I think it's that like introvert extrovert type thing, right? Where we're not going to fall into that one category and be completely that way. There are some people that are in the, you know, spectrum ends. I think a lot of times we have these traits come up when it's that fear of getting our needs met, that maybe we'll react in different ways depending on who we're in that relationship with. So the disorganized or fearful attachment style means that you have both high attachment anxiety and high attachment avoidance. So if you've ever been in a relationship where you feel like it's push-pull, like they want closeness and all of a sudden they're pushing you away, or you've experienced that where you're like, ooh, I want closeness, I want intimacy. And as soon as it happens, you're like, ooh, nope, that's not what I wanted, and push it away. This is what happens with that attachment style. So that constantly feeling I'm not good and others are not trustworthy. So I'm constantly in that anxious flux of, oh, I can't take care of myself, I need other people. And then other people aren't trustworthy, I don't want to be close to other people, and having that back and forth. So typically we talk about like anxious or avoidant, or talking about attachment styles, but you can have both of those traits, and there is a category that fits for that.
Thank you for clarifying all of that. Now, You primarily work with more couples and relationships. And so just out of curiosity, if somebody's listening here and they're trying to figure out like, well, what attachment style do I have? Are there certain triggers? So let's just take one at a time. Like, are there certain things that would trigger somebody, say, so they would know, okay, I have an avoidant attachment, or I have an anxious attachment. Like, how would that look actually in real life in a relationship?
Yeah. So some of the anxious attachment style is they're constantly scanning their environment for any chance they could be receiving rejection. So these people, the same with people who have experienced trauma, are actually really accurate at depicting what is happening in the environment. When a single shift, little shift happens in emotion, or someone says something or has some sort of intonation, they're really great at picking that up. But your interpretation is always that it's negative on you. So for example, maybe you can pick up that someone's starting to text you less. Like, they're still texting you, but you're able to kind of sense, okay, well, they're not being as descriptive in their text, they're not texting back as quickly. Your first interpretation of that is going to be, oh my gosh, what did I do wrong? Are they leaving me? Are they rejecting me? So I'm always interpreting that as like, I'm doing something wrong. Or it could be they're busy at work, or they're distracted, or, you know, other myriad of things. But we always interpret that as we're the problem. So people who have this type of attachment style when it comes to sex in relationships, they always are, if they're not having sex quite as much, or it seems like their partner didn't enjoy that time as much, it's like, oh my goodness, our relationship's doomed. They don't find me attractive. Our sex life is going to be dull. All these things, right? We constantly go to this like panic state of, this is the final, this is it. This is finally happening. They're rejecting me. So you're kind of constantly on edge around that. You also are always taking care of others. You're not worried as much about your needs, and you're more compensating, trying to keep people close in your life by constantly doing for them. And you might feel yourself getting like resentful or angry, and your partner might be like, I don't know what's going on. Like, why are you so angry that you're making that, like, you've made dinner 3 times this week. You always make dinner 3 times this week, or 3 times during the week. What's going on? And it's because you've been building that up and not voicing your needs, because you're afraid, if I voice a need, I'm going to get called needy or clingy. So you never talk about your own needs, and you're always scanning the environment for rejection. That's what that might look like if you have a more anxious attachment.
Okay. And so, you know, we've talked a little bit about the problems, but what does it look like if someone's secure?
Yeah. So if someone's secure, right? If their partner seems like they aren't texting them as much, the secure person will be like, hey, it seems like you're not texting me as much. Is there something going on? Right. So they still might have that sense. They might still like see that distancing, but they're not going to think, oh my goodness, my partner's rejecting me, create all these stories around it to get really emotionally worked up. They're just going to be direct to say, hey, this is going on. Some of the secure attachment is very, can easily speak about their needs and what they need from their partner, can clearly identify boundaries they have with their partners and are okay holding those boundaries. They don't allow for people to be boundary pushers and always push back on what they're saying they're okay with or not okay with. These are the type of people that typically have more long-term relationships. So they're not having as many volatile breakups or divorces. They just typically are in longer-term, secure, healthy relationships. It's also highly correlated with all good mental health things. So they have less depression, less anxiety, less eating disorder. Less eating disorder symptoms. So overall, just a more healthy, regulated person. They typically aren't changing jobs all the time. Mm-hmm. They are successful in their career. They have usually pretty healthy family lives and friends. It's kind of, again, that thing that we're all aiming for, that ability to create this life around us that is not either constantly distanced and alone or constantly on an emotional roller coaster. They're able to, it's not that they don't have conflict. Everyone has conflict, but they're able to manage it in a way where they're not shutting down their partner and they're not also worrying about rejection from their partner. They're just able to clearly communicate during conflict. Yeah.
So you said a couple of important things, and I want to touch on both. One being, you know, how does this look for someone who has an eating disorder? But two, later on, you know, before we end, I do want to touch on, wow, everyone is seeking to have a secure attachment. So if somebody's listening and going, well, I don't have that, like, am I doomed? Can I not have it if I don't already? And so maybe we could talk about that as therapists, like how we can create that. Right. Because I don't want people listening going, oh my gosh, like I don't relate to that. So what does that mean for me? Right. So, but in terms of someone who has an eating disorder and maybe has an insecure attachment, I know we had talked a little bit earlier about that, like what that actually would look like. And so, you know, what I see is, as you were saying, someone who has an anxious attachment, they're constantly afraid of being left. They're worried about being rejected and abandoned. And, you know, what I see is people who, you know, you were talking about body image, they want to control their food and their weight and their size because that helps regulate their deep emotional pain and anxiety over being rejected and left, right? So if they can look and be perfect, then they're going to be desired and acceptable, right? And that means, hey, I'm good enough for others. And then that decreases their anxiety about being left. Mm-hmm. But people with eating disorders, the second they deviate, the second they quote unquote screw up or they fail, their anxiety increases because they're convinced they failed. They're not good enough. Now they're not going to look perfect. Mm-hmm. Right? And then of course they're going to be left. Right. So then they scramble to get right back on track to decrease this anxiety and regulate their emotions and calm their fears of being left and abandoned. Yeah. And I don't know if you've ever seen that in your practice or had any experience with that yourself.
Yeah. I think, again, like with my practice, I don't work with eating disorders, but man, every person that I talk to that has an anxious attachment style, this is a part of it, is their body image is such a thing. Like whenever they sense rejection, their first go-to is, well, it's because I'm not thin enough. That's why they rejected me. Of course it is. Or when they start dating someone new, even if they've like been okay body image confidence-wise or like disordered eating thoughts, like they're okay. But then they start dating someone and that can be super triggering. Like, well, like we're going to the pool or I had to wear a bathing suit or they ordered this at the restaurant. What can I order? Or, you know, we're going hiking. I'm in Colorado. I know you're in California. So it's big there too. We're going hiking. You know, what if I can't keep up with them? Are they going to think I'm like out of shape or not good enough for them? Or are they going to judge my body in workout clothes? Mm-hmm. I hear that a lot too. So I think definitely with dating, especially the anxious attachment style, it's just another lens that in our culture, we're hyper fixated on around rejection. And seeing it from the other side too, like people judge other people's bodies so much as a way to gain their own like self-confidence. Like my partner needs to look great, and that's a reflection on me. So, right, that anxious feeling is coming from somewhere, because there's definitely toxicity in our culture around body image. But you have to figure out, like, where does that sit for me and my values? Do I want to be around someone who's going to be encouraging that type of thoughts and feelings?
So how would that look with someone who's got an avoidant attachment? Would what you just described be somebody who's more avoidant? Like, oh, if my partner doesn't look perfect, then I'm going to be out. I can't be with them because I'm avoiding something that's going on with me.
Yeah. So I think I skipped avoidant attachment when describing it. I think I did anxious and secure. So just again, a little bit more, someone who's avoidant, there's a constant feeling of I have to constantly take care of myself. So when someone doesn't follow through on something, it's again, another evidence of like, see, I told you, like, I can't depend on people. Constantly wanting more alone time and feeling like people are encroaching on your space, and also wanting more connection. And having this difficulty of like not knowing how do I create more of that connection. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you feel it, it becomes overwhelming and you push away, and you might even get this feeling of like disgust when people are super like emotional or want to be close to you. So this might be what that more looks like. And it is a very like, they're very confident. They seem self-assured. You wouldn't think they would have insecurities. They don't show that to other people because they want other people to see them as being perfect. But underneath all of that is still all the negative thoughts and feelings. But with the avoidant attachment, the other way it's protective is it cuts you off from that emotion. A lot of times we're disconnected from our body and from emotion. So this might feel like someone's a little bit more colder or disconnected, as again, a way to protect themselves. But being more vulnerable, connected to our body and emotions, how we create connection. So sometimes they have difficulty, well, I don't know how I'm feeling. How am I supposed to tell someone how I'm feeling? So being able to kind of relearn how to connect to that piece of yourself as well. But yeah, so that is very much an avoidant stance of like, my partner is a reflection on me, right? I'm perfect. I have everything together. So my partner is a reflection on me. And if they can't take care of that, like, I'm have a very negative view of them and their body. And people that, not to hate on people with avoidant attachments, but they are very hypercritical of their partners. Because again, right, they're not wanting there to be anything that's going to take away from their resource of taking care of themselves and being that perfect self. And so they're hypercritical of their partners. And so they're probably more likely to make negative body comments or comments about their food or what they're eating.
So, wow, this just brought something to my mind. What a horrible combination for somebody who's got an avoidant attachment to be with someone who's got an anxious attachment.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Yeah. Because they're also someone with the anxious attachment and who has an eating disorder. If their partner says, well, why are you eating that? You know, they're like, oh my gosh, they're so correct. Why am I eating that? Like, it's going to make me undesirable. They're going to reject me and like go into a whole spiral. Whereas someone insecure would be like, I'm eat whatever the heck I want. What are you talking about? Right. But someone with the anxious attachment and eating disorder, that's totally going to feed into those beliefs and confirm those beliefs. Like, see, told you, if I don't eat perfectly and my body's not perfect, this person's going to criticize me and reject me.
So anyone out there listening, if your partner is saying things to you much like Brittany's talking about and feeding into your eating disorder and criticizing what you're eating or your body, or sounds like Ed talk in your head, really listen to this. That is not healthy. Yeah. That is abusive. Yeah. Actually, that's emotionally abusive.
It is. And it's probably coming from their own insecurities as well. Because, right, they have this view that I have to be perfect. So everyone else has to be perfect around me. So being able to confront them will be actually healthy for the other person who is saying those things as well. They're like, no, actually, that's really like unhealthy way of thinking and going about the world.
So I love what you just shared, though, too, of what it sounds like if you're with a healthy partner, a secure partner. Mm-hmm. Right. Sounds so different, right? So if you're somebody who has anxious attachment, pairing with somebody who's going to be more abusive, who's got an avoidant attachment, like, not, I could see that somebody who's got anxious attachment just staying with that person, trying to keep them from leaving, and that just being horrible. But listening to, wow, if I have a secure partner and somebody who's saying something that's so different, what that would feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, right. So a secure partner wouldn't probably even say anything about what you're eating. And they would just, you know, praise and give affirmation around your body. And probably more about your personality and you as a person rather than just your body as well. Right. That's how it would sound to have a secure partner. They wouldn't talk about your food or mention how much you're exercising or working out. They would just be a positive support system for you.
And, you know, just because we didn't really get too much into avoidant attachment style and looking at how that looks in an eating disorder, you know, is thinking, I think that's really what it looks like more with binge eating is the disconnection from emotion. Because really when someone does turn to food, they are numbing out from their emotions. Yeah. They're totally escaping from their emotions or what the real issue is that they don't want to deal with in that moment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I often hear people will say like, oh my gosh, doc, I don't know why I did it again. I just, you know, and then they're so mad at themselves. They feel guilty. Like, I don't want to do this, but there's some underlying reason. There's something that's drawing you to wanting to numb out or escape. You know, you don't want to feel something or deal with something. And it could very well be an unhealthy relationship that you don't want to, you know, look at. Or, you know, maybe it's painful to be in that relationship and it's much easier to go turn to the food to cope or to, you know, get some comfort from.
Yeah. We have this constant fear of, at any moment, if I'm not perfect and I don't take care of everything, then the rug will be pulled out from under me. Or that's someone with an avoidant attachment. That's what they're constantly feeling. This stress of like, I have to be perfect and in control of everything at all times, or else everything will fall apart. That's what their anxiety is like, I just got to keep going, got to keep being perfect because everything will fall apart if I don't. Right. So it might just be like, just wanting a relief and a release from that feeling and that stress and that anxiety. That food can definitely provide at times of just like, you know, I've been so hyper controlled in all these areas. I just want to eat and feel numb and feel disconnected from that anxiety. And a lot of times people with avoidant attachment, it's, you know, easier to develop relationships with like animals and inanimate objects because they won't abandon them or not be available or be too needy. And so food can also be that, right? They have this relationship with food of like, you know what? Food's always there. Food's going to be dependable. You know, for some people it's not, but a lot of times it is, especially in America. It is very easily accessible and dependable. And so that might be the one thing in your life that you have a consistent relationship with.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I do think that we don't really think about this a lot in terms of like how attachment is so, it really infiltrates lots of areas in our lives and it can really have such an impact. Right. Yeah. And that's why I'm really glad we're talking about it. But, you know, again, I don't want to have people listening going, oh my gosh, like now what? Like, you know, I'm trying to treat the eating disorder. I'm trying to treat my depression, or maybe I'm in couples therapy, but like, is this really the thing I need to look at? And so, if somebody's come to you and says, okay, help me have a secure attachment. Can I even have that? Can I switch? Like, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I think, you know, of course we always want to deal with the most pressing symptoms. Someone's like, there's like 20 things I need to work on now. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Right. So obviously like, you know, working on the most pressing symptoms, that's going to keep them physically and mentally safe. But this is definitely an area that is like the foundation of who we are, is our relationships. So definitely ways to create secure attachment. I always say, especially if you are single, is starting with your friendships and family. Family might not be a safe place for you to start building this, but if it is, great. If not, friendships are your chosen family. Finding people that make you feel really, really great and awesome about yourself. If you ever have a relationship with people in general, and after spending time with them, you don't feel good about yourself, you feel anxious or self-conscious or negative about your body, right? This is not an environment to really cultivate that secure attachment. People that think you are a rock star, that's who you want to be around, people that you just can't wait to be around more. This is the type of friendships you want to start building because it's a lot safer and less risky than a romantic relationship. If a friend rejects you, still hurts, still painful, still to grieve that, but it's different than the vulnerability risk we take in romantic relationships. So really having that solid social group that is your place to go back to recenter of like, I feel good about myself, I feel confident, I feel capable, I feel like I can trust and rely on others, finding that safe space so that when you start dating, if someone says a comment to you like, well, why are you going to eat that? You go back to your safe space and you tell them that and they're like, get out. What are you doing? Right. So even if some of that insecure attachment starts popping up, you have a reference of like, no, my other friends who care and love me don't care what I eat, don't care what I look like. This is the type of relationship I want to have. Mm-hmm. It's easier to see that contrast of how unhealthy those other relationships are. And then start slowly building this feeling, right, that I'm lovable and others are trustworthy. And we're not letting in people in our life that are going to erode that feeling. Because the really unfortunate, sad piece, this is a lot harder to build a secure attachment than it is to create an insecure attachment. So we need to be really good at safeguarding and not allowing people in our life that are going to cause more damage there.
And I think that's so important. What you just said is like, sometimes it's not the healthiest place to start with your family, because I hear this all the time is, well, I grew up hearing these messages like, you know, don't eat that, or, you know, looking a certain way is important. And so growing up hearing this, thinking that is actually normal or that's important. And so to be around people like friends or other people who have never been exposed to that or don't think that way is so different. And it's kind of mind-boggling to people sometimes. And so being around that kind of environment and seeing, oh, that's new, that's different. Because if you continually go back to the same environment that created maybe this type of attachment, guess what? It's not going to really help you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can think back to on some of my own family cultural beliefs around food and body shape and size and image and all those messages we get. And when we're kids and when we're in that family and in that culture, it just seems normal and how it should be. So yeah, I think getting other experiences from people who maybe had healthier cultures around food and body image growing up and being like, oh, wait, no, that makes so much more sense. It's so much healthier. I know going back sometimes like around family that will make comments, it's like, that's ridiculous. Like, why did I ever accept that as something that should be thrown around casually around the Thanksgiving dinner table? I think is an important thing of having that, again, really cultivating that social group of people that have different worldviews, which also is not to say that, but is also not easy to do in adulthood. So if you're struggling with that, know that, yes, it's not always the easiest thing to do, but think of how much time, again, if you're single, that you've spent on dating apps or how much time you spent with your romantic partner cultivating that relationship. We spend a fraction of that time trying to build our chosen family, our friendship group. It definitely can happen.
For sure. And again, you know, I don't want to make it sound like with us, we're focusing on this right now, but this is not the only factor contributing to struggles in relationships or eating disorders by any means. You know, these are one contributing factor, but it's definitely worth talking about and looking at because it has an impact. And, you know, I don't want to just make it sound so simplistic, like, well, just fix your attachment style and then all this goes away. Like,
yeah,
lots of other factors, genetics and, you know, society and, I mean, so many things, but this is definitely something that I think is worthwhile to look into and talk about in therapy and to just ask yourself about and say, wow, is this something I have been struggling with and didn't even know it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that's also why it's so important to find a good therapist that you click with, right? Because you're also developing an attachment relationship with that therapist. So if you don't have family, if you don't have friends, like your therapist is someone that you should be developing. I know I treat and tell my clients all the time how much I think they're rock stars, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to build that trusting relationship with your therapist as well. And you know, if you're going and working on an eating disorder, even having a therapist who has a better, healthier view and lens around food and body image is a person to start developing that attachment relationship with as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. So I know we're getting to time. Is there any last statement or any last words you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, I would say one of the things I always like to say as an encouragement is that 67% of the population are secure. So even though we are talking about, you know, the pathology around attachment, there is a lot of people in this world that do have secure attachments. So there are people you can find to start building that social support around. And also, even if you have some more avoidant and anxious tendencies, I know I still have some of my own attachment tendencies, especially when I'm stressed, is that there can be strength and resiliency in some of that. So someone with an anxious attachment style values community and relationships and is so selfless. These are wonderful things and qualities. And people that avoid attachment are super independent and driven and, you know, want to be striving for that perfection and things they do. And these things can make them very successful. So again, there are these like pieces that we can choose from and take from these attachment behaviors, but also wanting to make sure we can be aware of ways that it's creating disconnection or disordered eating thoughts.
Fantastic. Really appreciate all of your insights and help here. So if people want to find you and get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah. So my best way is my Instagram handle. It's the one like social media piece that I dedicate my time to. But it is Lone Wolf Psych. And I'll also in that bio have a link to my website where you can take an attachment quiz, but you can also Google a bunch of attachment quizzes as well if you're wanting to figure out which one is my attachment style.
Fantastic. I'm sure people want to find you, so I will have all that information in the show notes as well. So, all right. Thank you so much. Such great information. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun having the conversation with you.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.